Well, joining us on the line to discuss what exactly should be done with regard to Iran and with regard to NATO is a man who knows better than anybody else that I know, Admiral James Stavridis, his former Supreme Allied Commander of NATO, author of a bunch of best-selling books. He has a new book coming out later this year in October called Sailing True North. He is currently the chair of the board of the U.S. Naval Institution, vetted by both the Hillary Clinton campaign and the Donald Trump campaign as a possible member of the cabinet or possibly vice president. Admiral Stavridis, thanks so much for joining us.
Always a pleasure, Ben.
So let's start with this. You've been watching the developments with Iran as Iran has gotten more militant, has looked to attack shipping in the Straits of Oman. They apparently, in the last couple of days, were about to attack a British ship, and they were sort of dissuaded from doing so by a military show of force on the Allied side. What exactly should the world be looking to do with Iran, given Iran's newfound aggressiveness?
First, we ought to recognize how Iran sees the region and the challenges. And Iran, as you well know, Ben, is the inheritor of the Persian Empire. And if you go back and look at a map of the Persian Empire about 2,000 years ago, stretches from the Mediterranean Sea through Damascus, through Baghdad, to Tehran, through Afghanistan to India and south to the Arabian Peninsula. It's really no coincidence that Iran will continue to push all of the boundaries of that because it's, for them, a religious mission, proselytizing for the Shia part of the Islamic faith. So first and foremost, we ought to recognize the challenge. Number two is to deal with it. We're going to have to confront Iran, but also negotiate with Iran. And those are two separate aspects of policy. We're pretty good at confronting Iran. We're not so good at the moment of negotiating with Iran. We really need to do both. And thirdly, we need a unified front. We've sort of drifted into this situation where this is about the U.S. versus Iran. We need to widen the aperture so that it's the entire global community which wants to keep the Strait of Hormuz open. We have many allies, partners, and friends who can and will work with us. We have some disagreements with our European colleagues at the moment about the approach on countering Iran's nuclear program. But broadly speaking, the third most important thing we should do is work with allies, partners, and friends to both confront and ultimately negotiate with Iran.
On a practical level, what kind of confrontation, Admiral Stavridis, do you think that we should be pursuing? So obviously the president apparently had planes in the air, called them back after Iran knocked down a United States drone. There was controversy over whether that was a good move or a bad move. It seemed to me you either had to make the call one way or another. Kind of dillying on it was sort of the worst signal that you could send to Iran. There's been talk about flagging international ships with the American flag or putting American resources around shipping in the Straits of Hormuz the way that we did back in the 1980s. What do you think would be the best tactic in terms of protecting that area?
I think here we really can take a page out of history and go back to the tanker war, and I'd encourage your listeners to dust off that history. You can Google simply tanker war. This is in the 1980s. We had actually a very similar situation. Iran continued to threaten to close the Strait of Hormuz. They actually dumped mines into the water. Tankers were hitting mines. Some of them were damaged. We had the prospect of sinking tankers that would have closed the strait. You can sweep a mine. You can't sweep a tanker that's sunk at the bottom of the strait if it's going to impede traffic. So how did we handle that situation? Ultimately, we had to use military force fairly dramatically against Iran. We sank several of their ships. We knocked out much of their command and control. We went after some of their ports. Once we showed that military card to them in a very serious way, ultimately they backed down. I don't think we're at the point yet, Ben, where we need an aggressive wide range of strikes. And I think the president was right to hold on the previous strike. But if Iran continues on this collision course and, for example, actually seizes and tries to take over a British tanker, I think that's going to require a military confrontation. Let's hope we don't get there.
Well, given all of this and given the flexibility the president needs, what do you make of the House vote today to basically prevent the president from taking unilateral measures against the government of Iran? Obviously, the Senate has not passed anything remotely like that. And over the course of the last century, the power to make war has basically drifted from the legislature to the executive branch. Do you think it's a good idea or a bad idea for Congress to be taking back this sort of power at this point?
I think it's a bad idea for Congress to say to the executive branch, you have to come to us before you conduct individual military strikes. I think there are going to be instances where the executive branch needs the flexibility, and I think President Obama would tell you this, President W. Bush would tell you this, and I think President Trump's administration is going to make this point pretty vividly, that a tool of the conduct of foreign power is ultimately going to require some level of military strikes. In my view, that's different than going to the Congress, which I think is appropriate if you're going to embark on a long campaign, which would fall under the rubric of an actual war. So I think it is not appropriate for the Congress to say, anytime you're going to conduct a military strike, you have to come to Congress and get approval. That's simply untenable.
We're talking with Admiral James Stavridis. Final question for you, Admiral Stavridis. When we look at Iran and we look at the possibility of negotiating with them on nuclear questions, what approach should we be taking? So the great drawback of the Iran deal that was put in place by the Obama administration, in my opinion, the opinion of many on the right, is that it didn't deal at all with Iran's missile capacity, with its capacity to fund terrorism, and that after 10 years, it basically gave them free rein to pursue a nuclear weapon now with a strengthened economy, that it strengthened the hand of the regime. What should the United States be looking for from Iran in any sort of negotiation, given the fact that if Iran wanted to denuclearize, they could do that immediately, and they would pretty much immediately be welcomed into the world economy?
I know, and I'm frankly at times surprised they're not going to do that, but let's go back to where we started the conversation. Their view is they want to be a dominant power in the region. What we should do is get our European allies back in alignment with us. The economy of Iran is crumbling at the moment under very aggressive sanctions from the United States. That's the right course of action. I think ultimately we will succeed in forcing Iran back to the negotiating table. And when we do that, we need a better version of the old nuclear deal that would include restrictions on the ballistic missiles and on the use of the surrogate activity through the region. Look, this is going to be a long process, but we ought to start by getting the Europeans on side with us. When Iran takes actions like trying to attack a British tanker, they're playing into our hands. The French are already with us. The British will come our way. NATO can be a big tool in this. It's allies, partners, and friends. Get it out of U.S. versus Iran. Let's get it back to the world versus Iran.
So actually, I did have one more question for you, since, of course, you are the former Supreme Allied Commander of NATO. There are a lot of folks on the right who have sort of demeaned what NATO means, why we are funding NATO, why we are in NATO. Can you make the short case for why NATO still matters?
I sure can. First and foremost, let's do the numbers. U.S. spends $600 billion a year on defense. China spends $200 billion. Russia spends $80 billion. How much do those, quote, freeloading, unquote, Europeans spend? $300 billion. NATO, the rest of NATO outside the United States, spends more than Russia and China combined. So we may be frustrated they don't hit that 2% of GDP target, but frankly, they're the second largest defense budget in the world after ours. Point two, geography. They are parked right on the edge of all the global trouble spots. They become a very logical forward operating station for us. And number three, Ben, at the end of the day, they're frustrating, but they share our values. Values matter between nations. I think there's still a very strong case for NATO. We had to push them on spending. I applaud the president for doing so. They're improving as a result of that work. I think, however, we need to recognize they are the best pool of partners we're going to find in the world.
Admiral James Stavridis, thanks so much for joining the show. Really appreciate it. Check out his book come October 2019. I'm sure we'll have him on again before that. Sailing True North. Admiral Stavridis, thanks for your time.
Ben, thanks a lot. Talk next time. Bye-bye. Well-